Hey there, and welcome to episode 24 of the Sensuality Academy podcast. This week is a bit of a different format because I've got an incredible guest to share with you, and I just know that you're going to love them. Megan Vander, whose pronouns are she, her, they, and them, is a NAM, Melbourne-based, tough and tender bisexual artist. They are the current VP of Melbourne Bisexual Network and one of the creators of the Big Bi Plus Bonanza. They have particular interests in queerness, community, love, and honesty, and they aim to always be curious and brave. In this episode, we're talking all about bisexuality and sexual fluidity. We explore what bisexuality is and isn't, the freedom in sexual and gender expression, how to be a better ally, internalized biphobia, bisexual legitimacy, bi-curiosity, the spaciousness of being bisexual, the poor mental health among bisexual folk, bi-privilege, performative femininity, and so much more. It's a really juicy conversation. And it's a topic that I've been wanting to explore here on the podcast for quite some time. Before we dive into the interview today, I thought I'd share with you why this topic is so near and dear to my heart. As you'll hear soon, Meg and I speak a lot about this idea of being a legitimate bisexual, feeling like a fraud and not quite knowing if you're bi enough to come out. As a very close friend of mine, Meg has helped me through these same feelings of being an imposter as I've explored my own sexuality. Coupled with reading Florence Given's epic book, Women Don't Owe You Pretty, and specifically her chapter titled Maybe It's a Girl Crush, Maybe You're Just Queer, I've had somewhat of an awakening lately. Side note, I absolutely insist every human read this book. It's absolutely incredible, and I'm going to provide a link in the show notes. So go ahead, find that link, order a copy right now while you're listening, and you can thank me later because it is a game changer. Anyway, I'm not going to go on too much about myself because this episode is not about me, but safe to say I've learned a lot from Meg. I was over here having had sexual experiences with women, but still thinking I was straight, being attracted to women, but not all women. And I was thinking, surely if you're not straight, you find all women attractive, right? Just like all straight women find all men attractive? I guess it doesn't work like that. I hadn't quite allowed myself to put all of this together until recently, and I have Meg to thank for holding space to ask the scary questions and for being a sounding board as I worked through this new terrain. They're an absolute gem of a human being, and I love them so very much. And I know after this episode, you will too. If you love it, be sure to screenshot and share, text it to your friends, and come find me over on Instagram to share your biggest takeaways. So, without further ado, here's Meg. Enjoy the episode. Welcome to the Sensuality Academy podcast, where I share tangible techniques to help you embody your femininity, enhance your sex life, and elevate your relationships. I'm your host, Eleanor Hadley, sensuality coach and founder of Sensual Yoga. Now let's unleash your inner sensualista. Hello, Megan, and welcome to the Sensuality Academy podcast. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be on the show with you.
I'm so looking forward to this chat today. So we're talking all about bisexuality and sexual fluidity. So let's just dive straight into it. We've already introduced who you are and what you do. So let's talk about it. What is bisexuality?
It's a really good question. And I think that if you were to ask me to do like a gay 101, people would be outraged. But fact of the matter is, we're still kind of confused about what bisexuality is. I always come back to my favorite definition, which is by an amazing bisexual activist called Robin Ox. And hers is, I call myself bisexual because I acknowledge I have in myself the potential to be attracted romantically and or sexually to people of more than one sex and or gender, not necessarily at the same time, not necessarily in the same way, and not necessarily to the same degree. I love this definition because it's just huge. It's really spacious and it gives a lot of room for everything that can exist in this space of multi-gender attraction.
I think that's a wonderful explanation of it, because there are so many misconceptions of what bisexual actually means. I know that, like you explained in that definition and in our chat the other day, you're talking about being bisexual as being you and another. And I think that a lot of people get very confused and assume that because of the bi aspect, that it means two. So can you speak a little bit more about why bi doesn't necessarily mean only two, especially when we're talking about genders?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's something that as our, particularly as our concepts of gender expand and we're much less restrained by the idea of man and woman being the only things that are possible, which have never been the only things possible, but we've kind of been quite rooted in that binary idea of two. And I think, yeah, bi, obviously bi, two, but I like to think of it more as my own gender and other genders. So it gives a lot of room for people who are similar to me in terms of their gender and people who are very different from me. And that can be lots of things. So men, women, non-binary people, genderqueer folk, like it can be inclusive of everybody. And again, that not everybody's version of bisexuality is the same. And that's part of what's wonderful about it too. You get to define it for yourself.
Yeah, I think that too often we get really caught up in the restriction, the perceived restriction of labels. But the idea is not to be restrictive at all, is it?
It's what I love most about it. I think like freedom is such an important concept to me. And I think that I've only felt that kind of freedom with this label. And it's the irony, isn't it? Like you don't need a label to be free, but often by finding labels that fit, you feel a lot more freedom. And I know that heterosexual never fit me. And to be honest, I think I felt a lot of discomfort with bisexuality as well, because it was a word that was laden with a lot of stereotypes and discomfort. But I think the more I've learned to understand about it and the more I've looked at the history and the more I've found bi community, the more I see that that's the place where I feel I have the most room to be myself and not be restricted by ideas of how I'm supposed to perform and the kind of people I'm supposed to be attracted to.
I think that's so, so well put, because I know that, you know, in conversation with, you know, family members or just people out in the world, there are a lot of people that are like, oh gosh, why are there all these labels? What do they all mean? And it's like people find it really stressful, particularly when it has nothing to do with them, which I find very curious. But like you said, there's so much freedom that can come with identifying and being part of a community as well. And that's what you're all about.
Yeah, so much so. And I think that I definitely see the problem with labels, and I see how they can be really restrictive and make us feel like we have to decide on something and stick with it. And again, I think that's what I like about bisexuality and sexual fluidity, because it's the kind of the point is that you're not restricting yourself. The point is that you're giving yourself opportunity to be attracted to the kinds of people you're attracted to and to perform your own gender in ways that are much more expansive than what I got shown growing up, being assigned female at birth and being told what a woman was supposed to look like and supposed to do and supposed to behave in these certain ways. And yeah, like just there's so much more room for me here in this kind of queer space, because it isn't so bound up with like black and white and specific ideas of yes and no. It's a lot more like, I always think of it as the gray space between, but it's like the technicolor gray space in the middle of the binaries.
Oh, I love that. It's a technicolor space in between. How lovely. So I want to talk a little bit more. So for people who are listening, I'm hoping that we've got people listening that either identify as bisexual, they're interested, and I'm hoping that we have people listening who have no clue and maybe don't identify this way at all. So when we're talking about, you know, these labels, and kind of communities, a lot of people are not sure about the difference between bisexual and pansexual. Can you speak to that as well?
Yeah, I think that, again, there's a lot of discourse around this and kind of a lot of angst as well, like quite a bit of infighting, which I feel kind of sad about, because I feel like, you know, all multi-gender attracted folk are kind of up against the same battles. So, you know, I really don't think it's, I think words really matter to the individual, and they do matter on a political level as well. But like, I have friends who are pansexual, I have friends who are bisexual. And I also view bisexual more as like an umbrella term, which is inclusive of pansexual. So I kind of feel that my feeling is that the fight isn't within ourselves about what label we choose. It's more about how the world can perceive us and a lot of the barriers that are in place to us feeling happy and being able to express ourselves. So yeah, pan is generally seen as attraction to people, I think often irrelevant of gender or of all genders. But again, bisexual can be that too. So I think sometimes the nitty gritty of what one means and what the other means, I think we can get a bit lost in that. And like, language changes, words change, and they evolve to fit, you know, the world that we live in as that changes. So I also think choose the label that fits right for you, and let other people choose the labels that fit right for them as well.
Yeah, and just respecting what labels people choose to identify or not identify with at all.
So much so.
Yeah, I think that there's, like anything, and everything exists on a spectrum, and I talk about this quite a lot in my work, that, you know, some people might feel really comfortable identifying with a label, and some people might be like, it's not necessary, I don't need to. And that's kind of each to their own. But I think you made a really great point about language evolving. And I know that for some people, it can just seem all too much, because what they used to be able to say is not okay now, and people kind of harp on about what's politically correct. But I think it's really just about being adaptable and learning when we know better, we can do better, and allowing ourselves to let go of the ideas that we once had and kind of expanding that.
And nodding along heavily as you say all this, like trying to be quiet for the podcast. And so much. I feel that there can be, again, a lot of like fear and frustration, like in queer community as well, of always having to get everything right and not being able to say something. And if you get, you know, say the wrong thing, or you use the language that was right that isn't right anymore, it can be so stressful. And it's not to say that I don't think our impact matters. I think it really does. I just think sometimes we get lost in forgetting that our intention matters too, and not more than impact. I think we have to own the impact that we have. But I think if we're in places with good intentions and really trying to learn, like, we can't always get everything right, and it's constantly changing. So, you know, how can you expect everybody to always be reaching these impossible standards? And I think it's very alienating, and I think it can do a lot of damage, because particularly I don't want, you know, the queer space to be a space where we're policing people's language and being classist about it, because it's just another type of critiquing people for not having the same kind of education or the same access to information as you do. And I think there's, I don't know, I feel a lot of sadness in that space. I think if we could all come at it a little bit more with space for error, and, you know, trying to support one another with kindness and communicating when we think we could help someone do a better job, or being able to own our mistakes, but also like acknowledge we're all imperfect and trying our best, probably.
This is something that I think really resonates right now, like with what's going on in the world and politically, not just in the queer space and the queer communities, and we're obviously focusing on bisexuality today, but this is such an important lesson that I think we could all do to take away. If someone has something that they take away from this episode, I'd love this to be one of the things, because I think that we're all trying to do our best, but sometimes with all of the changing language and changing ideas and constantly finding out new things and what is and isn't okay, it can seem really overwhelming, especially if you're trying to, you know, make a difference and kind of stand up for causes and issues and things that you believe in. But I know that for me and a lot of people that I've spoken to, sometimes we can stop ourselves from actually saying something or speaking up because we have a fear of getting it wrong and saying the wrong thing. And this is especially true with cancel culture. Like, we see in, you know, big names and even like smaller people, that people get called out for saying the wrong thing. And even if they like apologize, it's somehow not enough. And I just think that we really need to kind of flip that.
Yeah, I think there's, again, there's so much loss in that, isn't it? It's all about calling people out and saying that they no longer get to be a part of something. And I think it's really, like, you know, it's a privilege to be called out or called in. If people take the time to educate you on what you're getting wrong, I think it's really, really important to listen to that and to value the time that people have put into caring enough to inform you. But I also think, like, we're human, we're going to make mistakes. And I think there needs to be room for error and room for people to come back from those things too. I've seen a few great examples actually recently online of people kind of calling in and calling out when people have made quite big mistakes, and people owning those mistakes and apologizing, and there being that space for conversation and moving through it. And that's given me a bit more hope recently, actually, that there is space for that, for us to be human and to still get to exist. Because, like, I don't know about the rest of you, but that's something that keeps happening to me. It's like I keep trying real hard and, like, I keep messing up because I'm a whole human being, and it's going to keep happening for the rest of my life. And I don't want to stop trying because I'm afraid to get things wrong. And I think that that kind of perfectionist view can be so harmful and really stop you from being able to do anything for fear of not doing it perfectly. And I don't want to live in that space. I want to live in a space where I can be brave and own my mistakes and do better.
Absolutely. I think that there's so much to learn here, and that when we're talking about gender, when we're talking about sexuality, what do you think that people outside of these communities could do to learn? And I guess what I'm specifically referring to is, how can those listening and people who maybe don't identify as bisexual or like queer in any realm, how can they be better allies?
Yeah, I think it's a really wonderful question. I think one of the key words that you mentioned is just listening. So rather than thinking that you know or coming with all of your assumptions, because we are all programmed to make assumptions about people. And I think it's a really important part, I think, of the work that I do as, like, a queer activist and an educator and advocate, is questioning my own biases and my own internalized biphobia and my own internalized homophobia, because we're taught to be homophobic and biphobic in the same ways that we're taught to be racist and to be classist and have these ideas of right and wrong that are, you know, really don't take into account the nuance of human existence. And I think a lot of what has really helped me is being honest with myself about the things that I feel, and acknowledging that I have all these ways of shaming myself because I think I'm supposed to do things in a particular way, even though I've realized that I can't, even if I wanted to. Being honest with myself about my own phobias, my own internalized phobias, has been, it's like a way of reclaiming your power about those things and not just letting them hurt you. So not just hating myself because I'm bisexual, because there have been moments of that I've definitely experienced. And it's a long path to get from stewing in that shame to feeling acceptance, and even longer to get to a place where maybe you can feel some pride. And bifolk really struggle with pride. Like, often we can accept ourselves as being bisexual, but we struggle to feel pride in that. And I think there's so much sadness if you can't feel pride in the things about yourself which are wonderful. And I think a lot of what I really care about is helping bifolk to be proud of the fact that they're bisexual, because it's really, like, a special and wonderful, spacious, beautiful thing to be. So yeah, I think really, really listening and letting people define themselves in the ways that they choose, and not telling them that they're actually gay or, you know, oh, really, you're just doing this for attention, because we hear that so much, and it's really hard to get past those things, to realizing that it's just who we are. It's not about what everyone thinks about it.
Oh, let's talk more about that, because I know from discussions with you, but just living in the world, that bisexuality is so often, like you said, it's seen as, like, a pit stop on the way to being quote-unquote fully gay, and it's seen as a phase and all these other really harmful judgments about it. And when I put up some question stickers on Instagram this week asking for people to share if they had anything that they wanted us to talk about, I had so many women in particular asking, like, what, like, am I legitimate in my bisexuality if I haven't been with someone of the same gender? Like, am I bisexual enough? And there's so much fear over being enough and what bi even means and if they're allowed to be that way.
Oh yeah, the imposter syndrome is real. Hey, like this idea of not being queer enough, not being straight enough. And I think it's why we can feel so alienated from all spaces. So in straight spaces, I feel like, oh God, I'm not straight enough to be here. People will know that I'm not right here. And in queer spaces, I could be like, oh shit, what if I have like a partner of another gender? Will people not accept me? And they'll make me feel like I'm actually heterosexual and I don't deserve to be here and take up space. And I think this is such a common thing we hear from bi folk, is this feeling of never being quite right and needing to prove ourselves, or needing to give a list of everybody that we've had sex with to prove that, yes, I'm really bisexual, I promise. Like, look at all these people I've fucked. And I hate that. Like, you know, nobody else has to do that. And I think that it's about how you define yourself. So if you feel like you're bisexual, you get to claim that. And if you have attraction to different genders, even if you've never explored that, like that doesn't mean that you're not that. It just means maybe that's not an opportunity that's arisen. Maybe it's not something you want to explore, but it doesn't deny the fact that it's who you are and how you experience the world. And I hate this kind of gatekeeping, because again, it's so damaging, where people who really struggle to fit in and struggle with our mental health often more than most monosexuals. That means gay or straight folk. And like, God, that's so damaging for us to feel that we're never okay and that it's never okay to be ourselves. And so, you know, and I hate as well this idea that bi curiosity is a bad thing. I'm like, what a beautiful thing to be curious about something. I think it's one of the best ways to live your life is with curiosity. So I really want to claim bi curious as being like a good thing. That's totally a wonderful space to be in. And it's also okay if that leads you all the way to gay. It's also okay if it leads you straight back to being not bisexual at all. Like, you know, let's allow these environments of curiosity and change and adventure, and let people live their lives without telling them who they are or what they should be doing. I think that's something I feel very strongly about. You know, be conscious of how you treat people in the process. I think that can be a fear for some people, is that they might be like a stepping stone or something that someone will try and discard. But I think that's true of all aspects of life, is, you know, treat people with respect and value them even as you're navigating your own identity. Be bi curious. Be curious. That's a good thing. It's a wonderful thing.
I love that. Curiosity is such a wonderful thing. And I think that a lot of people in my DMs this week have been asking specifically about exactly what you're talking about, bisexuality versus bi-curiosity. And at what point do you call yourself bisexual? And obviously the messaging that we're getting from you, Meg, is that you can call yourself whatever the hell you want, right? You don't have to decide one or the other, but yeah, be curious. And if you decide that it's a label that you'd like to explore and to claim, go for it. If not, that's cool too.
Yeah. And, you know, if it's something you move through and move out of, I also think there's no shame in that either. We can often shame people for that process of maybe moving to bisexual before they get to gay. And I'm like, I'm totally okay with that. If you want to come into bi spaces and be with us, and then you realize that actually you fit better in a gay or lesbian space, that's totally okay. Of course, like everything is movement and transition and growth and change. I just think, you know, be conscious of not slamming the door on the way out, but you're definitely welcome. And I think it's one of my favorite things about bi plus community, is that it's been one of the most welcoming spaces I've found, because so many of us know what it feels like to not be welcomed or to be excluded based on who we're dating or how we're presenting. And I think, yeah, move through all the things you want to move through. Like, we're not constant things. I might not always identify in the same way as I do forever. Like, and I also think that that's okay. Like, we change. And I think not allowing people that room to change their mind is, again, like not what conceptually I want my bisexuality to be about. I want it to be a spacious place where I could go through phases of being very much only attracted to certain people and then later attracted to other types of people. Like, that's okay. We're always in flux. And I think that's what I like about this, is there's a lot of room for change. And I don't ever want to feel like I have to tick certain boxes to be okay in who I am. I want to feel like there's room for me to become all the things I want to be and change in a million different ways, and that's still going to be okay.
Isn't it so strange how sexuality is deemed as something that should be static? And so, you know, our bodies change, our types of food that we like change, our careers change, like all these things throughout our lives change and our preferences for different things change. And so naturally, sexuality should just be a progression of that or an extension of that. Sometimes maybe, yeah, it is quite static and it's fixed and you're like, cool, I'm set here and I'm comfy here, just like you might be comfy in one suburb that you've lived in for a long time. But for some reason, people sort of see sexuality as something that you should decide on. For example, I have a friend of mine who was dating a woman a couple of years ago and now is dating a man. And I've heard from people say, oh, so she's straight again. So, well, no. No, that's just who she's with. And I know that you've experienced this as well. Like, no, who I'm with now doesn't determine my sexuality in general.
Yeah. And again, it's a real dangerous concept, isn't it? That the one thing we're doing at this moment in time defines all of us forever. And I, you know, like you say, nothing is static in our lives. And also it's totally fine if it is something that's a constant and that you feel the same way about it forever. Like, that's great too. I just think that that isn't the only option, and we shouldn't celebrate that above fluidity or change or evolving from something to another. And I think, yeah, there can be really these ideas of people who came out and then realized they're bisexual as being somehow traitors to queerness. And I'm like, no, they're still queer. Like, we're still very queer, irrelevant of what people assume about us based on who we're standing next to or whose hand we're holding. And again, our experiences are different. I definitely would never say that I experience the same things as a lesbian or a gay person. And I wouldn't pretend that I know what their experiences are like either. But often what happens is we experience a lot of the same things in terms of homophobia. And we also experience a lot of the same things, like in terms of that alienation from straight society. And we also experience biphobia. So it can be really compounded from all these different directions, this feeling of otherness. And there's studies to show that bifolk struggle with their mental health often more after coming out. Whereas for most monosexual folk, like, you know, gay men and lesbian women, and gay and lesbian people who don't identify as men and women, because that's definitely a space that exists too, that their mental health generally improves after coming out. And bi folk, we don't. We can really struggle more after coming out as bi. And that's sad. Like, we shouldn't suffer more the closer we get to becoming who we are. And I think that's a big part of why I really care about bi activism, is because that's a real thing, that we're suffering more for being ourselves. And that's, you know, it shouldn't be that way.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about this because I know it's a topic that you're really, really passionate about, Meg, the mental health among bi folk. I know when you first mentioned this to me, that people who identify as bi have poorer mental health than people who identify as gay or lesbian. And that initially surprised me. And the reason that I think it surprised me is because there's this perception that you've got the best of both worlds, air quotes, and that it should be easier because you can present as straight and get by, which is a problem in itself, that you should have to get by and present as straight. But can you talk a little bit more about bi erasure as well, and what it means to kind of live in that perceived in between, and how that can really affect people?
Yeah, I think it's a really quite a complex and nuanced aspect of this, is this idea that we're privileged when, you know, I'd argue so many of us feel really the opposite, that we're never seen for who we are. People never assume that I'm bisexual. They assume that I'm straight, or they assume that I'm gay. And generally, probably more often these days, they assume I'm gay because of how I present. And that's, you know, that's fine. I'm very happy to be assumed as gay. That's really not something that worries me. But it can feel hard. Like, it can also feel like there's always this part of me that is invisible, that unless you're standing in a room and I look like a woman and I'm holding hands with a woman and a man, like, at the same time, that then I could never look bisexual. And it's because, again, we assume that people are one or the other and not this other thing, which definitely also exists, which is neither gay nor straight. It's just, you know, 100% bisexual. And yeah, that really doesn't feel like privilege a lot of times. It feels like only facets of you get to exist and never the whole picture. And I think that does a lot of damage to us, of feeling like we have to compartmentalize parts of ourselves and feeling that we don't get to exist as a whole and as, you know, a whole human being. And that's an incredibly alienating with your own sense of self and sense of who you are. And I think it's one of the most important things I've found about finding bi plus community is being in a room where that's the default. And we talk about it as being like bi default, so bi default. And I try to view the world a little bit more that like that these days, that I assume people are bisexual unless they tell me otherwise, because that makes sense to me. That's what I understand the best. So I kind of think, you know, why wouldn't you be? And, you know, it's that allowing room for the nuance of a person as opposed to putting them in a box before you even know anything about them.
That's such an interesting way to look at it, like assumed bi. That's so interesting because...
Yeah, it's I love it. It just feels spacious.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to actually ask or share some of the things that came up from my audience when I asked them to share some questions. So one of my followers shared that she struggles with the notion of bisexuality because she identifies as bi, but she says that she married her husband before she got to explore. And as a consequence, she says, I feel like I can't be honest about my sexuality as I've never been with a woman. I feel like a fraud or secretive. Can you talk about this, like feeling like we spoke about being an imposter or feeling like an imposter? What would you say to women or men who haven't experienced being with someone of the same gender and therefore question whether they are really bi or not?
Yeah, I really empathize with this. I think it can be a really stressful thing because, again, we're taught that you're supposed to qualify your identity with evidence. You know, this idea that you need to come with a clipboard of all these different people you've had sex with in order to qualify as bisexual. And I hate that concept. It's, you know, do we ask people to qualify their heterosexuality with all the other gendered people they've had sex with? We would never do that. And we don't do that with young people to define that they're heterosexual in that way. I think that you don't need evidence to prove to people anything about who you are. It's how you feel in yourself. And I'd also say that something that's just really helped a lot of, you know, people I know in these positions is to find bi plus community and meet other people who are in a similar position, because it can be really affirming to have friends who understand how this feels and to listen and like empathize with this part of you that feels like you're not enough or you're an imposter because you're not. If you feel bisexual, you're bisexual. And that's something you get to claim for yourself at any point in your life, irrelevant of your experiences. And I think that finding bi plus community can be such an affirming way to explore that part of your identity without it being something you have to explore in terms of dating or things. Like, you can be in a monogamous happy relationship or a monogamous not happy relationship and still be a bisexual person who is comfortable in that aspect of their identity without needing to have physically explored it. Like, it's not a prerequisite for being bisexual is having had sex with all of the genders, not at all. And I would really recommend for them to try and find places which have bi plus community and to access people who will understand this part of them and affirm it in them, because it's a really special thing to be with people who validate these parts of yourself.
Oh, that's so, so beautiful. And I'm going to ask you more about the Melbourne Bisexual Network and the event you've got coming up soon. But I wanted to also share another question that I got, and this is from an ally. So she said that she's looking for advice on how to navigate a relationship with a partner who identifies as bi but hasn't been able to explore their bisexuality yet.
I think this is lovely. I love that they're here wanting to affirm their partner. That's really heartening for me to hear, because, again, so often we hear that bi folk are in relationships with people who are very threatened by their sexuality and, you know, tie it up with dangerous stereotypes about us being promiscuous or not being able to be with one person or be honest, like all these dangerous stereotypes, which are no more true of us than they are of anybody of any sexuality. And I think it's really wonderful that they want to consider how they can help their partner to feel like they are themselves and that they're loved and accepted as they are. Like, I think that's, yeah, thank you for existing. That makes me really happy. And I would say, yeah, read about it and maybe tap into some community, tap into maybe some partners of bi folk stuff on Facebook, because these things definitely exist. And I'm hearing about this more, partners understanding the specific difficulties that bi folks suffer with and wanting to alleviate some of that. And I think just being with them and being open to talking about it is huge. Like having a partner who's open to talking about this facet of your identity, even if they don't experience it themselves, is so affirming and so wonderful. Just like, you know, we all want to be loved for all of our parts in all of the ways that we exist. Like it's really special to have someone who wants to engage with you about a part of your identity which maybe you struggle with, maybe you haven't fully navigated, maybe you don't feel okay with. Like I think, yeah, be open to chatting with your partner, listening to them, and maybe thinking about ways that you can tap into community as well, and make getting support for you if it's something that you're struggling with, those internalized biphobic feelings or your fears because of what you've been programmed with. I think it's really wonderful to explore those things within yourself to support the people you love as well.
I think that's so beautiful. Like actually questioning, I talk about this all the time, questioning your conditioning. So really looking in and seeing, do I have any internalized biphobia? Does this make me uncomfortable? And why? Where did I learn this from? I think that that's so important to do with everything in life, but especially for this person in this relationship. This person, it's really beautiful that they're so aware that they want to, you know, make sure that their partner feels comfortable. And another thing that I would also suggest, and this is definitely not for everybody, but and I will do a podcast episode about this at another time, but also the option of exploring non-monogamy and potentially opening the relationship. Obviously, there are a lot of things to consider in that kind of relationship style, but it can be a really free.
From a perspective of, yeah, feeling loved and also free to explore parts of yourself from a safe place, I think definitely. And I think it's part of what's so wonderful about non-monogamy is it really encourages like honest talking about everything. So it gives a lot of room for folks to explore parts of their identity which maybe they would not feel okay to explore if they weren't being cared for and supported and loved in different ways. And I think, yeah, it's a very valid and an important way to be able to explore parts of yourself if everyone's consenting, definitely.
Absolutely, that's the key. It's all about consensual non-monogamy. And I know in my experience, and also I have multiple friends who also identify as bisexual and are non-monogamous, and it's incredibly supportive for them. They feel that real like care and love and respect, and non-monogamy, like just as a practice, it really, really encourages communication. Like you've never spoken so much about the state of your relationship until you've been non-monogamous.
Oh, definitely, for sure. I think it's really a space of a lot of work in healing and potential for all sorts, isn't it? And I just want, on that note, I kind of want to touch on that idea of that. I think because of a lot of the internalized stereotypes, we can almost get programmed to think it would be bad to be a non-monogamous bisexual. And I also really would critique that whole idea, is that just because maybe you're wanting to explore things in a way of freedom, that doesn't make you a bad bisexual. I'm like, you go and be bisexual however you want to be. Just, you know, be honest and get consent from the people you care about, and be open with people. I think that's really important, that you get to explore your sexuality and your gender in whatever ways feel right for you. You know, being conscious of caring of the people that you're impacting, of course. But I think that's, yeah, really important to mention. Thank you.
Absolutely. So I want to talk a little bit about femininity specifically. We know that I talk a lot about femininity and the energetics of the feminine and the masculine. And this is something that I myself really kind of got a little bit befuddled by when I was exploring bisexuality. And that is feeling like you maybe are performing your femininity when you're in an opposite gender relationship versus when you're in a same gender relationship. I know for me personally, and I spoke to you about this the other day, Meg, I I observed in myself that when I was getting ready to go on a date with a woman, I put on an outfit that was more masculine than feminine. And I looked in the mirror and I was like, what is this? Is this intentional? Is this subconscious? Do I feel like I have to perform in a certain way because suddenly I'm going on a date with a woman? Like, what's that about? Can you speak a little bit more about this idea of femininity?
Yeah, I think it's, again, really interesting. It comes up quite a bit with dating, I think. I think there's been a couple of studies on it that have talked about bi women dating and how differently they present depending on whether they're dating men or women or like non-binary folk. And I think it's really interesting because it sort of speaks to what roles we play romantically and maybe sexually and how we show up and which parts of ourselves we want to show off in different environments. And I think as well, it's something I think I've been reflecting on sort of more over the last little while is that, you know, how you present is not necessarily the energy you're going to bring. I think you can bring like really masculine energy and be dressed in a really feminine way and vice versa, I think. But it's really interesting because it's about how it makes you feel, isn't it? And whether you feel empowered in different ways. And yeah, it's also how we want to be appealing to different people. I think definitely it's something I've noticed in myself at times of dating men or women or non-binary people is I do probably present slightly differently. And it's partly tied up with people pleasing and expectations and wanting to be, you know, wanting to mold myself to occasions. And it's also partly how I want to feel in my skin for the day as well. And I found that I feel in some ways more able to embrace a lot of my femininity when I'm not dressed in a super femme way, that I feel more in touch with, yeah, like my brand of femininity when I'm dressed maybe in a way that presents more masculine. And I also know that it puts off sometimes the kind of men that I definitely wouldn't be interested in too. So I think that there's this thing about playing with gender and being more queer in your presentation that maybe means you're going to be more likely to attract the kind of people who think similarly and maybe alienate some of the folks who probably really wouldn't be on the same page as you. And I think that that's, yeah, and there's, again, like allowing yourself that space to explore those things and to give a bit more freedom to maybe how you present and to play with those things and not necessarily to sit in judgment of it or whether you're performing, because all kind of dress and how we present are elements of performance and how we exist with one another. I think that, being seen and seeing people, there's lots of elements of that in there. And performance doesn't necessarily have to be a negative or an acting type of thing. It can also be ways of being playful and exploring within yourself.
Oh my gosh, that is so well said. So in the feminine space, I obviously teach a lot about the idea of femininity, and I do so from an energetic standpoint. And we've spoken a lot about this in the past. I've spoken about this on the podcast, that feminine and masculine are energetic traits. And yes, we can see them inside genders, but everybody who, regardless of what the gender they identify with, we have these energies. And I honestly really feel like we should rename them. I also call them, they are called yin and yang and go and flow, but it's just these energetic properties. And yes, as a cis woman, I identify very heavily with my feminine side, but I also really identify with my masculine side when I'm just getting shit done and when I'm in certain energies. And I just love what you said about, you know, even if I'm presenting as masculine externally by the clothing that I might be wearing, you said that you can often feel really feminine in that outfit. And I think that that's something that a lot of people don't quite realize. When I'm working in the feminine space, you know, I follow a lot of coaches who teach about femininity, and while I love the realm of femininity, sometimes I do feel like we can still get so wrapped up in these heteronormative ideas of what is feminine and what is masculine. And I love how you described the other day that you feel, and correct me if I'm wrong, that often when you feel most in your feminine is when you feel like that tough and tenderness. Can you speak a little bit more to that?
Yeah, I love this concept of the tough and tender queer, because I identify as queer in my gender as well as my sexuality. And I think That it's something, yeah, it's been nice giving myself more room to explore those things. And I think for a time I was quite alienated from my femininity. And actually, like, my friendship with you has been an important part of getting back in touch with those things and seeing that, like, I'm intensely feminine in lots of different ways. And again, that feminine and masculine are not the same as gender. Like, that there's all these beautiful spaces for all of these things, and to feel that it's entirely okay if I feel, you know, best when people assume I'm presenting in a masculine way, but actually I feel really feminine, and I really love connecting with softness. Like, for me, softness is one of the most important things which I try and stay in, is that, like, trying to be loving and being vulnerable, but also being incredibly strong and resilient. And I love that duality. And I think that we talk about this with lots of different concepts in terms of things like non-monogamy and gender and sexuality, like holding lots of things at the same time and then maybe being seeming quite in opposition to one another, but them not. Like, I don't see my toughness and my tenderness as separate. I see them as deeply interconnected, and one kind of enables the other. Like, because I'm strong, I also get to be soft, and because I'm more in touch with my, like, masculine energy, I also get to be more in touch with my feminine energy. So I think rather than seeing these things as oppositional, it really helps to look at them as being interconnected and nuanced. And like, those relationships are, like, wonderful, and I love being around people who are comfortable with these different aspects of themselves, because it gives me a lot more room to be comfortable with these aspects in myself. I love, you know, spending time with men who are really in touch with their feminine energy and gentle and soft and vulnerable. I adore that. And just like I love to be with non-binary people who really get to play with all of these different aspects, and genderqueer folk who aren't afraid to explore all of these parts of themselves. They're not afraid of what might happen if they lean into one. I think that's really special.
Yeah, I think that's such a wonderful thing to explore, because so often, and even in my work, like, I can see how, you know, I speak a lot about polarity and having these opposing forces to create this magnetism. But what's really nice is that these opposing forces can kind of switch and swap around, and they don't have to always exist inside these really strict structures. And I think that so often we get really, really concerned about how things are presenting. And I know that even in my work, you know, I've followed a lot of, like, feminine coaches, and there's even sometimes, as much as it's talking about the energy of the feminine, it's like, to be even more feminine, wear dresses and do your hair and blah, 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 and all these things that, yeah, sometimes can feel really great. And you're like, oh, I love this. I feel great and amazing. But other times I'm like, no, that doesn't make me feel connected to who I am today at all. And I know that personally I've felt pressure to be like, oh, should I be presenting more femininely? And even just recently noticing in myself that I felt this internalized pressure, or just this sway to present masculine in a masculine way, because I was going on a different type of date. It's just so interesting to notice that. And this is where I talk so much about questioning your conditioning, because it's like, okay, am I following, like, societal norms and rules, or is this just, like, how I feel, what I want to do, how I want to express myself today?
Oh, and isn't it such a time trying to unravel those things and to understand what you're doing because you were told to, what you're maybe not doing because you were told you should do it? Because I find that in myself sometimes. I feel like I purposely reject the things I think I was told to do. And sometimes that means rejecting things that actually will make me really happy. Like, I don't want to be afraid to do the things that are, like, normal or that are just what I was told, if they're what feels good. I think I'm all about interrogating what you've been told, and I'm also all about choosing what feels right for you. And if that is, you know, presenting in whatever way, like, I don't know, I kind of feel like you want to live the most joyous life possible, don't you? And I think exploring these things is just really important, because there's so much joy to be found in finding ways of expressing parts of yourself which maybe you haven't wanted to look at. Yeah, I think they're really interesting questions. And I think, like you say, that you encourage a lot of that kind of self-reflection, and there's kind of so much to be found by looking into these things and not being afraid. or being afraid and looking into them, because I speak as someone who's afraid of a lot of things. I just try not to let the fear stop me from doing things.
I think that like the message here is really like you do you, like what feels good, and actually take the time to explore what does feel good and what might be conditioning and what parts of conditioning do feel good. Because like you said, sometimes we can get a little bit stubborn and be like, well, I'm not going to do what I was told to do. Even though maybe it does feel good.
What are you talking about? Oh, definitely. It's something I've seen quite a lot in myself. And it's, you know, you don't want to get so wrapped up in doing the opposite that you're just rigidly following rules in a different way then, aren't you? You're rejecting the ones you are given and forcefully following other ones that don't fit you because you didn't want to acknowledge the first ones. And I think sometimes we can not see the second part of that. We just see the part that I rejected the norm and now I'm being myself. I'm like, but are you? Because who knows?
And this is where I feel like so many people can fall into, and I had so many people asking, you know, like, do I pass as bi? Am I bi enough? Am I legitimate enough? And we've spoken about this, and it's like all of a sudden when you realize this about yourself, and this is my experience too, you're like, oh, okay, so what do I have to change? Like, I have to sign like this waiver. I'm part of this club now. Like, do I get a uniform? Like, do I have to change myself? It's like, well, not really. Like, this is just your sexuality. You don't have to change your identity.
Again, yeah, there's this feeling of wanting to be a part of something, isn't it? There's quite a lot of like jokey bi culture popping up, the different stereotypes that we're trying to create, some of our own silly stereotypes around what bisexuals do and how they look. And I know I love the concepts of bisexual chaos. Like if you've got a group of bisexuals trying to decide anything is awkward, like all these. And I think part of that is a beautiful aspect of creating culture, particularly when you've been assigned so many negative stereotypes, you kind of want to create some of your own fun ones. And it's definitely not to say that all bisexual people cuff their jeans or have certain types of ear piercings or undercuts. But it's also okay if you want to start doing some of those things to be more visible as a bisexual person. You know, if you want to wear a badge that says you're bi, like that's also okay, because experiencing so much invisibility, sometimes it can be nice to be loudly yourself. Like I have an amazing group of friends, and I remember going up for Mardi Gras the other year, and we went out one day and everyone was so loudly bisexual, and there's this part of me that was like, oh, like kind of terrified of that, and there's this other part of me that's like, this is amazing to be visibly loudly ourselves and not be apologetic about it. So yeah, just kind of whatever feels good and allowing yourself ways to explore that. And it doesn't have to be hugely visible for everybody if you don't want it to be. Like you can be quietly bisexual and that's just as beautiful. But yeah, giving yourself that space and room and not just being worried about what everyone's going to think about it or say about it, I think is lovely to give that gift to yourself of exploration and freedom.
I love that example from Mardi Gras, like that everybody was so loudly bi. And it reminds me of this hilarious TikTok that I've come across, that it's like this audio of like someone asking like, are you gay? Yeah, I'm gay. And like there's someone who like opens up like their jacket and they're wearing like rainbow suspenders. It's kind of like, check it out, like look, here we go. And I love that like, yeah, maybe I'm wearing a pin that says I'm bi, like, hey, like just so you know, especially because we're talking so much about this idea of bi erasure, and that often bi people can feel really invisible and not seen in either space. And so it's like, yeah, maybe we can create this kind of language and culture around it to be more visible and more proud as well, like you said.
Yeah, and again, that thing of, I think some people are like, oh, why is being bisexual such a big part of your life? And I'm like, because it's just a huge part of my identity, which I felt for so long I didn't get to own, I didn't get to care for. So it's like something you squash down for long enough, something that can feel so incredibly shameful and not accepted. They're like, I want to be able to raise that up and feel okay about it. And more than that, I want to feel good about it. And I think that like we get to do that in the ways that we want. And, you know, I'm all for heterosexual people feeling really good about being heterosexual. Like, that's great. But I want to feel good about being bisexual. And I want my lesbian friends to feel good about being lesbian. I want my gay friends to feel good about being gay. And if part of that is loudly embracing it, I think hell yeah, that really matters. It really matters to find, we're talking about this, like to find ways to swim through the shame and get to a place where you can like shake a bit of it off and be like, hey, like I'm bisexual and that's okay. And then to climb a little bit higher and be like, I'm bisexual and it's bloody fantastic. Because yeah, I like we all deserve to feel joy and pride in who we are. And I'm all for finding ways to do that for yourself, like whether it's visible or not, like finding ways to love and accept these parts of yourself is so important.
You're clearly very passionate, which I love about you. And this has culminated, you're the VP of Melbourne Bisexual Network. And can you tell us a bit about your upcoming event, Big Bi Plus Bonanza?
So Melbourne Bisexual Network, I was incredibly grateful to find them a few years ago. I think I just didn't know anything that existed, and finding it and understanding some of my own mental health struggles by reading about them from other people and being like, oh, it's not just me. It's not just me who's struggling in these ways, has been so powerful for my life. Like the difference I've felt in myself over the last few years has been huge. And I'd highly recommend it to any bi folk who are struggling with those parts of themselves, just to find some Bi Plus community. And it's part of, why we developed the Big Bi Plus Bonanza last year, was as a big, a community event, a coming together of Bi Plus folk in a room to celebrate being bi. Like everyone was welcome, allies, families. And it was just a really, really special day. Like I think we had over 700 people came through. It was in Melbourne. And we had, a market and panels and artists. There's so many incredible Bi Plus artists and just amazing human beings in Melbourne. So it was really special. And I think just everyone being there and coming into a room where, again, the default was bisexual, like that's special. The first time anybody is in a room with just bi people and they're like, oh my God, this is what it feels like to be like the people around me and to not feel that there's something wrong with me or something different about me that isn't seen. Like it's really powerful. And it's one of those things I think you don't know how much you needed it till you find it. We hear that from so many people the first time they do it. It's very emotional because you're like, oh, it's just this feeling of getting to show up as yourself and being seen as yourself. And for people who maybe have never felt that in any space, at any point in their life, like I hadn't until I was, in my late 20s, like that's a big thing to feel like you haven't been able to show up as yourself openly in a room full of people. So the Bi Plus Bonanza was amazing for that. And I think obviously this year it's different because I'm in Melbourne and we're in hard lockdown. So we're creating online events and we're collaborating across the whole of Australia and New Zealand as well to bring the Stand By Us Festival. I say festival, it's actually a conference, but it's kind of a festival too. and obviously the bi is B-I because we do love a pun, the old bisexuals. It's a really special event put together by an amazing bunch of volunteers, and it's got all sorts. We've got panels, discussions, like parties, arts events, sports events. Like it's a really special thing that a lot of us have been working really hard on for a period, and everything's free. So there's going to be a lot of information up on about it on Facebook. We're launching a website next week, which will be standbyus.com. And it's pretty special.
So special. So can you tell us when that is all happening?
Yeah, so it's going to be from the 18th to the 23rd of September. So just in a very close to now, actually, which is we've all been realizing a bit more the last couple of weeks. It's going to be accessible as well. It's going to have live captioning. So it's all going to be happening on Zoom and with this wonderful plugin called Otter, which enables live captioning too. And we'll have sort of details of how to access all those things across our website and on the Facebook events as well.
Amazing. So I'll put all these details into the show notes too. So anybody who is interested in joining can do so. It sounds wonderful. I'm very excited to be involved as well. What I'm going to do as well, I love journal prompts, and this is something that I talk about in most episodes. I share like some things to consider. So in the next week on Instagram, we're going to put up a whole bunch of insightful journal prompts that Megan and I have put together to really unpack how you feel about bisexuality, whether you identify as bisexual or not. So keep an eye out for that. So just to wrap up, Meg, it's been so great chatting with you today. I could chat for hours with you, and I frequently do. I want to ask you, what would you love people to take away from this episode? Like, what is the one biggest thing that you just want people to know, regardless of how they identify?
Ooh, it's a big question. I think just going in for those, that self-reflection of challenging the assumptions you make about people and the assumptions you make about the ways in which people exist in the world, I think that we can be very restrictive with ourselves and also with other people. And the thing I've loved most about being in bi-plus spaces and learning about bisexuality is just that it's very spacious and there's a lot of freedom in it. And there's just so much room. And I think if we could all make fewer assumptions about the people around us, that would be really wonderful, because it kind of gives all of us a lot more room to be authentically ourselves and to be honest about who we are when we're not feeling like we're coming up against assumptions and that people have already decided that they know who we are. So giving ourselves and the people around us a little bit more freedom and space to be themselves.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing so openly with us, so eloquently with us. I hope that this episode has been very enlightening for everybody listening. Thank you again. I love you so much, and I really appreciate you being here and sharing with us.
I love you so much. Thank you for having me on the show. It's been gorgeous to chat with you about all this. And I hope it's been useful and affirming and helpful though for those listening in. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Sensuality Academy podcast. Before you go, I want to invite you to take my free quiz to discover your pleasure language. This really quick, fun quiz will get you started on your journey to explore your own pleasure and how to communicate this with a partner. Plus, you'll receive a bonus worksheet with journaling prompts to dive even deeper. Check it out now in the show notes or head to eleanorhadley.com/pleasure language. Also, don't forget to share with your friends, post it to your stories, and tag me over on Instagram @eleanorhadley. Enjoy!